Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Cheaper Than Therapy, a podcast that journeys into conversations that demystify, destigmatize, and desensitize what goes on both inside the therapy room and in daily life.
I'm Vanessa Bennett.
And I'm Danae Logan.
And we are seekers, soul sisters, and holders of sacred space. Every week, we sit down for soul-provoking conversations with fellow seekers, thought leaders, change makers, and even real people during live coaching sessions as they navigate the hard work it takes to be a human.
This is Cheaper Than Therapy.
We're coming down the mountain. She'll be coming around the mountain when she comes. We're coming. Dodging deers. Yes, y'all. We're coming down from Idlewild in California right now. We just finished our weekend retreat. And thank God my New Yorker, my upstate New Yorker spidey senses kicked in because a deer ran right across the road. And I was like, Danae, stop. It was very close. And then to be like, slow down. There's more deer around. Ah, so that was fun. We're just coming down from that now. But yeah, we're just wrapping a weekend and it was amazing, as they always are, transformative as they always are. Danae and I always end up coming away, I think, also transformed, understanding something in a different way, like maybe a new layer of something is revealed. And we, for the first time, and all the moms out there will appreciate this, decided to take a day or a day and a night for ourselves. And instead of rushing right home, which we usually do, we stayed one more night, just us, and now we're driving back the next morning. And what a difference that made, right? What are your reflections? By the way, I have a little microphone in my hand in the car and I'm passing it back and forth like I'm interviewing her.
Yeah, I think that you are right. Like, that to me is sort of the takeaway. And I think that's something that becomes one of those, like, practice what you're always speaking to moments, where whenever you're doing something as a mom and you're away from your kids, I think there's, you know, even when you're working, there's just such an urgency of like, they need me to get back. And certainly your kids are often like pulling on you to get back, like, mommy, how many more sleeps until you're going to be here? And I felt that as like my kiddo yesterday was like, don't you come home today? And like, just the thing of like, no, mommy needs like another minute to exhale into everything that's just come up and out. Because as you were speaking to, I think these immersives are, yes, we're holding space for others, but we're also processing things and understanding and integrating things. And so it's a lot, and it's a lot of like emotional stuff that comes to the surface. So just such a huge difference driving down the mountain with like a little bit of time. We sat in the hot tub and reflected last night, and it was just beautiful.
Yeah. So I guess we'll take you through some of the things that we, I don't want to say have come to understand, because that makes it sound like it's complete. And I almost feel like so much of this is never complete. And that's actually part of it. And it's kind of exciting that it's ever evolving. And there are layers to the understanding that continue to present themselves. But some of the conversations that we were having last night in the hot tub were really around, you know, I think as a people, we're always evolving, obviously. But when it comes to these conversations that you and I are having around like relational work, relationships are evolving. And that's not just romantic relationships, that's all relationships, right? But like you and I are always talking about around codependency, the container for relationships are evolving, the expectations around relationships are evolving, because we've just realized that the way that we've done it for the however many generations, essentially since patriarchy, so about 4,000 years, has not served us, right? It served some of us, but it hasn't served most of us. And so much of what we were talking about in the hot tub last night was around continuing to support each other in the uncomfortable evolutions that are happening. And we were talking a little bit about last night, like we use that term like evolve or die, right? It was like, not to be extreme, but it's like we are holding space for those who are maybe struggling to see what we see in this work and how we see that we're evolving and that people around us are evolving. And also, that doesn't mean that we hold ourselves back in our evolution to kind of like wait for them or wait for them to catch up or pull them along, which I think we've all done, especially as women, for a really long time.
Yeah, I think we can't pretend that we're not living through a very particular moment in history. And there were prophecies that spoke to how things were going to shift at this particular moment of the Aquarian Age that began at the beginning of 2023, and that the patriarchal structures as they had been were going to crumble, and that there was going to be a renaissance, and there was not going to be sort of it being switched out for a matriarchal culture, but the rise of the feminine was going to mean that we were going to be living in a time of integration, and that we come to understand that the structures that have provided an illusion of safety, an illusion of stability, were going to be seen in a different light. And we were going to realize that there was an illusion underneath the sense of safety that they offered. And in that collective awakening that we are witnessing happening before our eyes, we were going to start to value as a human race, being in the space of aliveness again, making meaning again, and really thinking about how we want to spend our one wild and precious life. And so, yes, there's like an individual awakening that we are experiencing collectively, but there's also the awakening for the collective. And with change comes a deep sense of destabilization. And I think that's something that we've been talking about a lot recently, the two of us, is just that like what we're seeing is a lot of what happens when something is dying, the ego death that we experience on an individual level. I think we're also seeing play out on a collective level when something is dying, there's like resistance at the end, right?
Yeah, I sent you this video the other day where we were saying I think I said like, oh, here it is. Here's the word that we've been circling around, that we've been trying to find in so many of these conversations we're having, right? And it's this term, extinction burst. And I mean, I'm going to kind of explain it, I guess, a little bit less eloquently than she did. But essentially, the gist of an extinction burst is whenever there is the extinction on the horizon of a pattern, a way of thinking, a way of living that no longer serves, that is in fact dying out, right? Obviously extinction. The burst is the collective kind of holding on, right? Like, so when we look at, for example, like politics in the United States right now, and we look at like the stripping away of rights, especially for women, right? And it just feels relentless. It is relentless because it's part of an extinction burst, right? It's like, essentially, those who want to uphold the ways of being are going to turn up in volume and in intensity their pushback in order to keep things status quo, right? And so rather than get hopeless. You know, oh no, like this, it's, everything is so horrible right now. Like, woe is me. Look at it. I mean, obviously there's going to be anger around it and stuff. That's a given, but looking at it as like, oh, I know what this is. This is an extinction burst. And what does that tell us? It tells us that the extinction is imminent. It tells us that there's a reason why there's pushback happening right now. Right. And so if we can just stay steady and stay the course, then it's going to play out exactly as it should. Yeah, I love that term. I think that gave me a lot of peace.
Yeah, I think there's that good old, you know, mantra of darkness cannot drive out darkness. And so if we meet darkness with more darkness, then we are in the space of darkness. And this is not me saying, you know, love and light and like just focus there. That's actually not what I'm saying. But I think that what we are being called to do in this moment in history is focus our eyes forward on the larger vision, not the noise that surrounds us that says what's not possible, where we are not, you know, it's not possible for us to evolve. Because what that does, if we focus there, if we focus on the fear, is lead to more fear, more stagnancy. And, you know, the beautiful thing about an extinction burst is extinction means this is happening. Like, take it, leave it, like it, love it, hate it, whatever. This is what's happening. This is the trajectory that we are on. The ways of doing life and relationships and caring for the earth that we inhabit is no longer sustainable. We cannot pretend that productivity at all costs is the way that we are meant to live. We cannot pretend that capitalism at the expense of our humanity and our sovereignty and the world, yeah, the world that we are living in is something that we can continue to turn a blind eye to. Like, you know, there's so many ways that people have spoken to like the last 3 or 4 years as, you know, everything has sort of become off track or, you know, just like this deep state of disruption. And yes, it is destabilizing because it is change, but there was a whole lot that was really out of alignment in terms of the way that we were living and in terms of, you know, equality for a lot of people for a very long time. And again, it's this thing of if I rested in the structures that gave me a sense of stability and sort of called that truth, it is really destabilizing for that to be uprooted and questioned. And the work is to stay in the curiosity around why am I so activated? Why is it so terrifying for me to see that there could be conceivably other truths beyond what I have held to be true up to this point?
This morning we were talking about, you know, because it's all part of the same conversation. It feels like a lot of different arms underneath the same umbrella. And I don't know if those metaphors work together, but in my head they do. And it feels like, so this morning we were talking about, for example, like, colonialism and white supremacy, right? And I was showing you a video and I was like, I love like the conversations that are happening. They just light me up. I get almost giddy when I see like, you know, for example, the conversation this morning, it was like a man who, you know, born and raised in India, and he was having this conversation on like a British television show where he was like, well, let's talk about this. Like, let's talk about why, you know, England, like in your history books, there's no mention of colonialism. You don't talk about how, you know, your industrial revolution was funded by funded by and on the backs of the people that you essentially took over. Right. And he was talking about obviously India as well. Like when you set foot in India, it was actually the richest place on the planet. And then when you left 200 years later, it was one of the poorest. Right. And I was telling you like, God, I just love that we're having these conversations because even in this country, it's the same thing. Right. Like people don't want to have to look at the truth of some of this, right? And we see this a lot in so many people that are pushing back against it's the woke mob, right? And it's like, why is it woke to want to know the truth and to have realistic conversations about our history? You know, like, let's talk about what we were founded on. Let's talk about the truth of where we're at, right? Because you can't actually evolve without digging up and digging out the truth. I mean, this is the same in therapy, right? When we talk about like understanding our past and there's a reason why with every one of these intensives we do, I always start with the, like, where did it all begin? And we talk about family of origin, and we talk about society, and like how it is that we came to be in relationships this way. It's important to understand where things start, right? And what we were saying, and I think is so interesting, is, and I guess it's, as a therapist, you know, we're so kind of trained to like sit back and observe and like make connections and see what maybe like why people are responding in the way that they respond. But when I look at it and I think, God, so many people, and I'll just, you know, I'll speak in this country only. So many people in our country are so attached to the identity of white savior, the United States is the best, you know, we're this, we're that, like a very kind of nationalistic way of being, that when you challenge that, it challenges their entire sense of who they are, right? And if they don't have anything else other than these beliefs that they've kind of hung their hat on, the ego is so terrified because now what? Like, who am I now? Or for example, even our beliefs around relationships. If I have believed that this is how relationships should look, and that, like, for example, suffering is part of relationships, you know, like this is just what women have to endure. It's part of it. Then if you're challenging that, you're going to challenge my sense of self. And that is part of why people push back so fucking hard about this stuff, in my opinion.
As I go around the corner. You know, I was just thinking as you were saying, like, woke mob, like the thought that came into my head was like, what is wrong with being awake, right? And I think there's like, there's something interesting in that, because I do think what we're experiencing and living through is a collective awakening. And I think that we have been, many of us, most of us, I would argue, sleepwalking through our one wild and precious life. And so to me, what that means is that, you know, it's funny because Carl Jung talks about how when we are resting our lives in something that is not in alignment with truth, that will come to the surface somehow. It will come to the surface in anxiety. It will come to the surface in depression,
in neuroses
of some sort. That is from a depth psychology perspective where those things come from. Now, it's interesting, you know, as we talk about it in the context of relationships, I was sharing with you that I like noticed on a comment, or, you know, one of the comments on one of my posts today, that someone had said something about, like, you know, relationship therapists who like have a very different perspective on a lot of what we speak to in the context of relationships. And she was sort of saying, you know, 40 years of research would suggest yada, yada, something different. And, you know, what we were sort of laughing about is if you think about what the world looked like 40 years ago, as we were doing research on relationships in a very particular socioeconomic demographic, you know, with a very particular part of the population, a very specific.
All white.
Yeah. I mean, I just think there's a lot of things that we're not factoring into the conversation about the research we were doing. And frankly, a lot of things about what relational fulfillment actually meant for women that we're not telling the truth about. And the thing to me about awakening is we tell the truth. That to me is like the number one distinction. It's like, what does it mean to awaken? It means there's no truths that we can't speak anymore. There's so many ways that what I have seen and what I experienced in my own life, the anxiety that I used to like experience perpetually was about the truths that I couldn't speak in my relationships. It was about the truths that I pushed down and sort of felt like this is what I have to do to maintain these attachments. And so we don't speak certain truths because if we do, people could leave, people could be hurt, I could be abandoned. And what I realized is that doesn't come at no cost, right? Like there's a way that the suffering actually comes from the belief that I am safe and stable in the things that I can't say, in the lies I tell to myself and others, you know?
Yeah. And also, I think it's important to say that this person that was commenting on your post posted like 10 times. I mean,
I wouldn't have even seen it. I was like, girl, are you really trying to get my attention?
But I think it's interesting. And I think that that's important because, again, like when we were reading it, we were immediately, both of us were like, you are so activated by this. You're so activated by somebody challenging the belief that you have held so tightly, that you have built, this person was a therapist, like built a career on, built a sense of safety on, a sense of understanding in this world on, and somebody is challenging that belief. And so they must be wrong. They must be shut down, and you are defensive and you are angry. And that goes for anything. That's why I brought up the thing around colonialism and white supremacy. It doesn't matter what we're talking about. It doesn't matter if we're talking about relationships or colonialism or religion, right? It's like, if you find yourself in such an activated state that you are posting on a stranger's video 10 times, my question to you as a therapist is, why are you so activated?
Like, what are you so afraid of?
What are you so afraid of? Like, what in what this person is saying has you so activated that you almost can't control yourself, right? And listen, I think that goes for everything. And that's an uncomfortable thing to hear because, you know, I think that's even if somebody is saying to me, I don't know, I'm going to make up like an extreme example. Like, I was going to say an extreme example. And then I was going to say like Scientology, for example, which like no shade to anybody listening who's a Scientologist. But, you know, somebody says to me like, there were these aliens and they came down to Earth and like, that's where humanity started. And, you know, all the things in like kind of the Scientology community and the belief structure. And somebody is saying this to me, where I'm at now in my life, I would just kind of be like, that's interesting. Tell me more. Like, tell me more about that. Right. I feel like I am established enough, not only in like my belief structure, not in dogma, but more in like my sense of self, that I'm okay being in ambiguity. And I say this like almost ad nauseum whenever we do a retreat or a workshop, I always say that one of the markers of EQ, of emotional intelligence, is our ability to hold opposing truths, is our ability to challenge ourselves when we find ourselves in black and white thinking. And by the way, black and white thinking is a very normal human thing to do. It's part of why we've survived as a species, right? Because we're really good at categorizing. We have a negativity bias, so we can like spidey sense the tiger in the bushes, right? Like all of these things, the way our brain work, there's not necessarily anything wrong with them. Like they've helped us in a lot of ways. But if we're talking emotional intelligence, which is something our ancestors running away from tigers didn't need in a lot of ways, we need to be able to challenge when we feel like we are righteous in our knowing of what is true and what is right and what is, you know, fact. I say there's got to be curiosity there. Like, what is that? Why are you so afraid? Right? And I think that that just in and of itself is an exercise that every single one of us on this planet needs to get better at doing. And it's part of why, even like in this country, why there's such a divide, right? In political stuff, in religious stuff, like I know best, you're wrong, I'm right. So much of it is like, it's that righteousness. It's like, I feel safe when I stand in what I know to be true, and that makes you wrong, right?
Yeah, I just had a realization as you were talking, like whenever someone asks me, and for some reason people ask this like question a lot, like in like what turns you on or like what's your like biggest turn on or quality in
like
another person? Well, you know, just like what are you most attracted to in another person? Like what's the quality? And I always say curiosity.
Yeah.
And what I realized as you were talking is the reason I find and what also like
indicator of EQ.
Well, that, right? But it's also an indication of a sense of solid self.
Yes,
because
yes.
If you can't sort of stay with yourself and be grounded in a backbone and not lose yourself in fear and all that it brings up for you, like, I think I get really turned off actually by a sense of like certainty and an unwillingness to be like in the exploration, in a conversation. And when people are like, I won't even dignify that with my presence, it just feels like fear exemplified. And I find that to be just like such a, like, it feels like the embodiment of anxiety to me. It feels like you are, and not that I'm like, you know, but what I mean when I say that is if I'm talking about like what turns me on, I'm talking about Eros, I'm talking about erotic charge. And to me, because I'm a core feminine, I get really like aroused by core masculine energy. And so the like strong enough in self to have like, I stay with myself enough to be curious, enough to be in the conversation and the exploration, I think is so hot. Like, I think it's such a turn on.
Well, I also think, I think you nailed it. It's like, there is insecurity in righteousness,
which is, for the record, wounded feminine energy.
Yeah. There's insecurity in that. And insecurity, I don't care who you are, insecurity is unattractive, right? Now, we're not talking about like our children and things like that, but like when we're talking about like polarity and like charge, there's insecurity is unattractive. And friendships too. I mean, that's the same, you know.
And I just want to say, for the record, when we say it's not a turn on, that's not us taking away from the human, like, you know, like, obviously we're all going to be
insecure.
Like, these are human realities, but there are moments when we're in our insecurity and it's not arousing. That's like, that's not going to turn someone necessarily turn me on when you're in that energy.
Totally. What are your thoughts on, because this has kind of been like rattling around as we've been talking. I happened to see something the other day where somebody was saying, we don't really have a word for, like, it's either patriarchy, it's matriarchy, or it's like what that middle ground is. And somebody said something around like, it feels like a place of androgyny. And I was like, oh, there's something in that that I find really interesting. And I also, I don't know, maybe this is a tangent, but what was coming up for me is I was thinking that would be interesting to explore, because when you think about some of the things that we are talking about right now out in the current landscape, some of the things that our elected representatives are putting so much energy into, like trans rights, right, being stripped away. There's somebody that you and I, well, I say used to follow, that talk that was like going on this whole thing about like Harry Styles, wearing like a dress, and basically like,
I don't unfollow people because I disagree.
No. There was a lot of things that were coming up with that one in particular, where I was just like, oh, I'm not, there's a lot of misogyny here, but, there was like a whole big thing, right? Where it was very like, oh, you're not a man. Like, he's not a man because he wears a dress, and like real men don't wear dresses. And I was like, ew, is this like the 40s? Like, are we really talking about this? But the reason why I bring that up is because if we're saying like this kind of random post I saw that like androgyny feels more like the middle, to me, there's something actually really exciting in that, because it is more of this blended nature. Androgyny means, to me, it's like that integration of masculine and feminine, right? And when I think about, whatever, we'll use Harry Styles as an example, but I always also use David Bowie too. And I talk about like, why is it that people find people like that so attractive, right? Especially women, but also men. I would say if you saw a David Bowie or a Harry Styles walking down the street and had no idea who they were, you probably wouldn't automatically be drawn to them, like at first glance. There is something in the energy of the two of them, and there's other examples, but that's just the two that are coming up, where it is like this integration of masculine and feminine that is so attractive and sexually charged, by the way, that both men and women become obsessed with it. Like, it's fucking hot, right? And so when this person's like, oh, you're not a man because you wear a dress, I was like, well, and they're like, you know, women aren't attracted to that. I'm like, well, Harry Styles and David Bowie both would argue that, because they're like two of the most like famous musicians of all time, right? So clearly people find them attractive. Women are literally throwing their underwear at Harry Styles left and right, you know?
Yes. I don't resonate with androgyny in terms of like, for me, what represents the integration of masculine and feminine. I understand what you're saying, and I think like they are a beautiful expression of the exploration of what that evolution can and does look like. And I think there are so many ways that I have spoken to, you know, our brothers and sisters in the trans community being the way showers and the light workers that sort of speak to what it means to do that integrative work. I think that's absolutely the truth. And for me, what I would use, and I'm like going to plug the title of my book a little bit here in this, that like it's sovereignty. And that means like I define myself from an integration of my own inner masculine and feminine, but that doesn't necessarily need to look like anything other than what I define for myself. To me, sovereignty is like, when you look up the definition of the word, it is like from an inner authority that governs, right? And we have lived for so long in a space where the external has been telling us what's true, where someone else is defining what our gender needs to look like. And to me, the evolution is, I define that for myself. I define what that looks like for myself. And I think that, you know, someone can be a core masculine man who in no way like outwardly expresses that and still be deeply integrated in his feminine. And that's just as beautiful as Harry Styles in a dress. Like, I think all of it is welcome in the new earth that we are cultivating. But I think that's from a space of sovereignty, you know?
Yeah. I love it all. It all is fascinating to me. I love watching it. Anyway, now you guys have a little bit of an insight into the kind of conversations that Danae and I have in the hot tub after a retreat. Because it never turns off, y'all. This is just who we are. But we hope to see some more of you on some of our next retreats. Because, boy, do we dive deep. And we challenge a lot of the conversations and status quo. That, you know, we're just all used to hearing and, get uncomfortable. That would be how I want to end this conversation, is like pushing y'all to get uncomfortable and get curious about the discomfort, right? And notice the defensiveness and the desire to shut it down and to shut the other person down. And just be curious about that. Right. And honestly, as an actual tangible exercise, if you're in dialogue with somebody that activates you and makes you get defensive, I've actually said to people tangibly, use the words, I'm curious about that. Can you tell me more? Right. Actually start to adopt that into your vernacular, into your, you know, your vocabulary, relationally, because I think those two little phrases would serve us all a lot of good. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. All right, y'all. Until next time.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Cheaper Than Therapy.
If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to share it with a friend, subscribe, and give us a 5-star review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
And if you want to connect with us more, find us on Instagram at Cheaper Than Therapy, the podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.